going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of Chicago Bullseye. And we're honored today with the presence of Paul Steno, elite writer for Bloggable. Paul, how you doing, my man? Thanks for coming on to Chicago Bullseye.
I'm good, Fred. Thanks for having me on. I'm really excited to talk to with you today.
Yeah, it's a rare experience to have, you know, Bloggables. We're probably the two counters, right? I mean, Bloggable is well known as, I'd say, the most pessimistic about the beloved Bulls, and I've unfortunately developed this reputation as being a blind Bulls fan in the Sea Red Fred moniker. But, you know, actually I am, I try to be as realistic as I can about their chances. So before we get into a little bit about what you're doing with Bloggable, let's first get a little background on you, Paul. Tell us a little bit about how you became a Bulls fan, where you're from, a little bit on your background for us.
So I'm from Wheaton, Illinois, which is about 30 miles west of Chicago. I became a Bulls fan probably in like 2005, 2006. I was born in 1995, so I'm 22 years old. I'm fairly young. I missed the dynasty for the most part. So before the Cubs won the World Series, I would always tell people that I'd never seen one of my teams win a championship because I didn't count the Bulls. But anyway, I became a fan like 2004, 2005. My favorite player growing up was Andres Nocioni. I remember watching the games on WGN with my dad. And then I loved Derrick Rose when he got drafted. I really became obsessed with the Bulls and really started following stats and writing about them in high school. So that was at the Eastern Conference final year when they had Derrick Rose and they played the Heat that year. My favorite team of all time was 2012-2013 Joakim Noah team with Nate Robinson when they played the Nets in the playoffs and that Game 7 series. That was awesome. My favorite game of all time was probably Game 4. So that was amazing. Those were some of my favorite teams, and I've really been kind of depressed the last 3-4 years because I feel like I kind of fell in love with the Bulls because they kind of epitomize the spirit of the city in terms of the hardworking culture and never giving up. And it was really motivating to watch them with like Joakim Noah and Lou Dane, Jimmy Butler, Derrick Rose, those guys. And then the last few years, it just seemed like they didn't care and the players didn't play as hard. So that was a little depressing. It tested my fandom a little bit, but it's too ingrained in my identity to be a Bulls fan. So I'll stick with them forever. So that's a little bit about how I became a Bulls fan.
So you have zero memory of the Cross post-Jordan Cross years?
Yeah, zero memory of that.
Oh, consider yourself blessed.
I was 2 or 3 years old.
Consider yourself blessed, brother. Consider yourself. So you've really only known in your whole life, your Bulls life, I think, what, one losing season up until this year, right? That was 08, the 07-08 season, which gloriously led to us winning the lottery and taking Rose over Beasley. So have been lived a blessed. I mean, you obviously on one end you did not experience the six titles, but you know,
vaguely remember the rebuild of Bulls, Eddie Curry, Tyson Chandler. I remember Scottie Pippen still being on the Bulls and watching him, but that was my earliest memory. Oh. So I don't remember a ton about those teams. A little bit from that.
Gotcha. Great stuff. So in Bloggable, now you're writing regularly. I've read your stuff. I appreciate, I think you take a fair approach over there. So I understand, you know, the angle it's going to come from Bloggable is that from a negative angle. I totally understand that. But I think you have been fair in your work. So let's get a little.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Let's get a little
take that a lot.
On yesterday's game, the disaster, of course, against the Cavs. I mean, what do you expect? This is a rebuild. This is what it's going to be. It's going to be ugly, and they're succeeding to a great level of being bad. What's your take on that game last night? And I'd like to start out with a question for you after you give your little 411 on the game. What is your go-forward list? What guys on this roster do you think will be on a team that will make the playoffs for the Chicago Bulls?
Yeah, so I was kind of thinking, when you gave me this question, I was kind of thinking, when will the Bulls make the playoffs next? And I think it's actually going to be a lot quicker than a lot of people think, because I think the East is still going to be relatively open and weak in the next coming years. So I don't think they're going to make it next year. They're going to have the high lottery pick, but I think it's going to take time for them to, for whoever it is to gel with, you know, Levine and Markkanen and whoever and the rest of the core. But I think the Bulls, I see them as kind of a back end of the playoff team in 2019, 2020. So that's in two seasons. So based on that, obviously Markkanen is still going to be around. Levine, I think the Bulls are definitely going to sign him to a long-term contract. They're not even going to let him go into restricted free agency just because he's a centerpiece of the Butler deal. Like, you kind of have to keep him since you invested so much into him since you gave him the Butler away. So Levine will be around. Dunn will be around. Valentine, I know you're a big fan of Valentine, so you'll like to hear this. I actually think that I do not like Valentine in his rookie. I thought he was going to be a dud for sure, but he's shooting 40.3% from three-point land. And while I don't think his ceiling is super-duper high, I think championship teams have and need players like Valentine, a guy that can come in and shoot threes. And I think his playmaking skills, which are what really made him special in college, have kind of grown a little bit this season. So that's nice to see, too. So I think Valentine's going to be around when the Bulls make the playoffs. Nwaba, he has a qualifying offer after this season, I think. And I don't think there's going to be a ton of interest around the NBA for him, so I think the Bulls can kind of re-sign him for decently cheap. So, and like Valentine, I think championship teams have guys like Nwaba, guys that are willing to do the dirt and play defense and stuff like that. So I think Nwaba's going to be an important part. And then Felicio, just because he during the summer, he signed for a four-year contract extension, so he'll be around. That's looking like a pretty bad mistake from Garpats right now, but Felicio is going to be around. Those are my six guys that I think are for sure going to be around. And then Jaren Grant and Portis are kind of maybes. They both picked up the options on for next year, so they'll have another year to prove what they're worth. So we'll see about that. But those six are the guys that are going to be around for sure, in my opinion.
What's your take on Dunn? What do you think of Dunn so far, what you've seen this year, who obviously is a key piece in that trade?
Yeah, so obviously Dunn, it's been Jekyll and Hyde all year, but he flashes a high ceiling. I think he's a solid player. Obviously, his rookie season was extremely disappointing, and the knock on him was that he was 22, 23 years old. He played 4 years in college. He should have been better his rookie season than what he was. But I think the steps that he has made from his first year in the NBA to this season are great in terms of his shooting. I don't necessarily like Fred Hoiberg, but Fred was helping him with his shooting. And I have it written down here somewhere. I have a bunch of notes in front of me, but I can't find it right now. He's improved his three-point shooting and his field goal percentage by, like, I think his three-point percentage was, like, by 15% compared to last year. So I like the strides that he's making in terms of shooting. And then, obviously, he has athleticism to get to the rim. He has to cut out all the turnovers, and he's a good defender. So I like what I see from Dunn. I think the Bulls, I think this is a way better situation for him. So I'm pretty high on Dunn. I think he's better than a lot of people are giving him credit for. So I like what I've seen from him so far.
No doubt. You know, the NBA is kind of unique in that you had one or two guys, and it's going to make all the difference in the world and really transform an organization. I'm with you. I think the rebuild's going to be very brief. In the fact that three major pieces were acquired in 1 year for Butler, and those guys are going to, I think all three of them, I think I view Dunn as a potential all-star. I think he can be, if he continues to shoot at this level, that's all I needed to see. His shooting was so bad before, that was my biggest concern in a league where you need to shoot the ball well. And I think now, hopefully, he can keep moving forward and keep on performing well. You know, the whole key is this next draft, right? There's a ton of great players at the top of the draft. If things keep on going as planned, the Bulls are going to be near that top. anybody you particularly like in than the others? Are you a Bagley guy? Are you a Doncic guy? Who are you really high on? Who do you want?
Well, Doncic really intrigues me because I think what the Bulls are lacking this year is a playmaker. You always hear all the analysts and writers griping about how the Bulls can't throw an entry pass, that there's nobody to set up other players for a better shot. I think Doncic could really help with that, obviously, since he's such a good passer, he's such a good playmaker, and then he shoots the three ball well, too. So I think Doncic, in terms of skill set, is a really good fit for the Bulls. However, if you kind of look how he fits in terms of, like, position with the Bulls, he'd kind of slot in at point guard, and then you'd theoretically move down to shooting guard. But then Levine has to play small forward, and I don't know if Levine's – he's 6'5", and offensively, he'd probably be all right at small forward, but defensively, that's a huge issue, plus a backcourt of – Doncic and Levine, that's not a very good defensive team, coupled with Markkanen, who has some defensive question marks as well. That's kind of an issue. So I think Bagley is the most important or the most logical fit in terms of both personnel and skill set, because he provides such an interesting complement to Markkanen, because Markkanen's kind of a stretch four shooter, whereas Bagley has a back to the basket game. He attacks the rim. He's a prolific dunker, and he also has the budding defensive making of a superstar on the defensive side, just because he's so athletic. He has such a good motor. He's so tall and big that he could be a great defender and kind of negate Markkanen if Markkanen does continue to have issues on the defensive end. Although I'll give Markkanen credit, he's a lot better defender than what I thought he would be. So I think Marvin Bagley is like my favorite right now. I still like Luka Doncic. Michael Porter Jr., the injury kind of it scares me. It's a lower back issue, and I was kind of reading up on the injury, and it sounds like other NBA players have had that surgery, and their careers were never the same. And I think the Bulls are at a point where they need the sure thing. I think Bagley or Doncic is more of a sure thing than Michael Porter Jr. So I'm going Bagley, then Doncic is my 1-2 right now.
Yeah, I have some concerns about Bagley, just in the fact that everything I've seen from him has been kind of post back to the basket orientated, and every time I watch it, I say, you know, with the superior talent in the NBA in the front court, it's going to be neutralized by better defensive front court players. And this game has moved so much more towards the perimeter. I just want to see more from him in the perimeter. I think he's got the tools to be an excellent defender, so that's huge. Just I want to see more from his perimeter game, because you know, the back to the basket, it being a more athletic Jahlil Okafor is not going to cut it. And you know, but we'll see. Believe me, if we get him, I'm going to be ecstatic, and I think he's going to be fine. But I just wanted to have a little bit more of a look at, see a little bit more from him in the perimeter, and see a little bit more of the other guys before I, you know, unequivocally say he's my guy. What about on to the next topic I want to talk about a little bit is your thoughts on the Nico Bobby situation. Now Nico is about to come back. When it happened, what did you think about it? Most importantly, which one of those two do you feel needs to go sooner rather than later? Or are you of the mind, like I am, that neither of these guys are on my go-forward list? I think Portis is not a good enough athlete for me, and Nico is just way too inconsistent. It's just a pile of suck on most nights.
Yeah, obviously the whole situation is very unfortunate for the Bulls. I just want to say, Nico Mirotic, he's been getting a lot of grief from fans, media, whoever, for kind of being reluctant to make amends with Bobby Portis. And I kind of feel for Nico Mirotic, just because, you know, if he wasn't a multi-million dollar athlete on a billion-dollar organization, like, if this happened in, like, the workplace, like, you would give the guy no grief for not wanting to talk to a guy who literally broke his face. So I think Nikola Mirotic is justified in not really wanting to talk to or be friends with Bobby Portis at this point. And I still think the whole thing is kind of unresolved at this point. The organization, the PR, they're all kind of pushing the narrative that everything's behind them and that they're going to be able to play together like nothing happened. I don't think that's the case. I think Bobby Portis' apology was kind of scripted and monotone and sincere, and I don't think Nikola Mirotic, as I said, is ready to move on from it as much as a lot of people think he is. I think his press conference kind of, with the media, kind of justified that. But as far as who I want them to keep, I think they should keep Nikola Mirotic just because he's a better player. But then if you're looking to trade Bobby Portis, Bobby Portis has done nothing to solidify his trade value at this point. So the Bulls would absolutely get nothing for him. So in that regard, I think they're going to try to get rid of Nikola Mirotic, maybe get a second-round pick for him or something else, try to scrap whatever they can for Nikola Mirotic, keep Bobby Portis around. And I think Nikola Mirotic will be gone by the trade deadline at the latest. I know that he can be traded starting January 15th, but I think at the latest he'll be gone by the trade deadline.
Yeah, it's kind of a unique situation. I know the fans are going to criticize whoever they want to, the front office for how they handle it, Nico, Bobby, whoever. I mean, I think the situation was handled about as well as you can expect. It's unfortunate it happened. It's ridiculous it happened. So, but as the results and what happened afterwards, it sounds like Nico was, you know, wasn't the innocent victim that was originally portrayed in what we all thought, right? He obviously was the victim.
Yeah.
The guy who suffered the most, but I think the suspension of 8 games shows that he was partly at fault too, and you know I think he's handled it about as well as you can. I thought his response to it was as good as it could be for this difficult situation, and everyone's going to get upset and throw their hands up and say how bad they handled it. I mean, what do you expect them to do? They don't have much. The management can't do much in this situation besides trade Nico when the time comes, or hold on to him and hope that this works out. I think that they'll probably try to move one or the other eventually too, but this year. But you know, big picture, you can't just send him out for a bag of donuts. You got to get something in return from this asset you devoted resources to, either Portis or you know Nico. So I think they're handling it fine, and hopefully Nico will come out, you know, play really well, and then, you know, play himself into a trade. That's my opinion. I'm just not a big fan. Next question I had for you, Garpax. I know this. I think it's probably what, in order to get hired over at Bloggable, you got to have the I want them fired. But what is your take on those two, their job over the course of your time there? And what was their, give me their two biggest wins and their two biggest mistakes.
They're two biggest. You want me to tell you their two biggest mistakes?
Two biggest mistakes, in your opinion, that Garpax made, and their two biggest wins.
Oh, okay. Well, as you kind of alluded to, I'm not a fan of Garpax, and I think the most frustrating thing about Garpax to me is I find myself almost rooting against some of the players that they pick just in spite of them, so they don't get the pleasure of knowing that they were right about something or that they found a diamond in the rough or whatever.
I think I see
that
for your
that's
boss.
That's a horrible thing to say as a fan, and I always feel guilty about it. But I just feel like the Bulls would be so much more enjoyable to watch from my perspective if Garpax would just go away, you know? Do you have that same feeling?
No. Not at all. I know I'm the only guy in the island with this one, like, you know, everybody wants to hire Saint Sam Hinkie, and I think what Sam Hinkie did in the Sixers was laughable. It was absolutely pathetic. And I think any fan base, I mean, I went through it, right? I had 5 seasons under Jerry Krause post-Jordan, which were 5 of the worst years of my life. And, you know, I do not at all, after going through that and going through 2004 to 2015, I have nothing but a smile on my face. I thought the Bulls for the past 7 years have been very competitive with an insane amount of injuries. Obviously, Tibbs was good for some things, and he was deranged in other aspects, and he had something to do with the premature deterioration of Noah's knees, and I think he had something to do with Rose. And You know, the guy just had one major fault that he couldn't control, despite the front office trying to do it. They fired him, and to me, that was the biggest change in everything. I think, you know, the fan base sided with Tibbs, and that's why they hate Gar Pax. And the team, to me, though, has not been. This has not been. I thought last year in the playoffs, I thoroughly enjoyed being up 2-0 on the Celtics. And then Rondo goes out, and who knows what happened, right? But, I mean, I do not think this is bad the last couple of years. Even with Gasol, and when we won the playoff series and we lost, you know, 4-2 to the Cavs, you know, we've been in the playoffs, what, 6 or 7 years? It's not like it's been awful, especially when you consider the amount of injuries we've had and the way we've limped into the playoffs every year. You know, partly because of lack of durability of the players, but also partly because of the head coach. But that's just my take. I mean, you know.
Yeah. So I think we're a little different on that.
No, and I know, I know,
from
I know
where we come from.
And I know you're 99%. I'd say 99.7% of the fan base agrees with you. I think they've drafted extremely well at the positions that they've picked at. I mean, you look at a guy like Tony Snell, who everybody was, oh, what's a bust? He's not a bust. He's, you know, top three in the league and. 3-point percentage. He didn't flourish under Tom Thibodeau. He's not the first or the last, but he has become a good NBA player. And where they picked him at is about as good as you should usually expect, right? Nico is about what you should expect picking in the 20s. You know, everyone will point to, obviously, Doug McDermott, and without a doubt that it was probably the worst of the worst, right, that they've had. He just hasn't. He hasn't turned into what they thought, but he's not a bust, and he's not top 10, right? Their top 10 picks have been Markkanen, Rose, and Noah, and the last three of them, and I've been high on all of them. So, so you'd say they're negative. So the worst, let's get the two big failures. I'm sure you'd probably agree with me that would be Doug McDermott. What else? And the trade to Oklahoma City.
Yeah, that's one that jumps back at me. Just they basically traded for three third stringers at that point for two players that I think could have brought in more value than that. So that's the one that really sticks out to me. I don't love the Fred Hoiberg hire. I don't know how you feel about Fred Hoiberg. This is kind of highlighted a lot on Blaggable. Just the cronyism and hiring friends, that kind of irks me a lot, the Iowa State connection and everything like that. And it just feels like they kind of, well, they did. They picked Fred Hoiberg over Jimmy Butler, and that just seems wrong to me. So,
no, they didn't do that, though. They didn't pick him over Jimmy Butler. It was just that Jimmy, but they're not going to sign Jimmy Butler in 2 years. They had to get something for him, and this is what the best they could get. And, you know, I think Jimmy Butler had a lot. I think Fred Hoiberg was a very minor part of that whole situation. I think in the entire organization, people were getting tired of his act. And, you know, they just didn't feel it was worth it anymore. I thought some of the stuff he did last year were just absolutely ludicrous, you know, with the coach Harder and all that nonsense and getting on his teammates. And you know what? After the playoffs came and in game three, he had the worst game I've ever seen from an NBA All-Star, even worse than Kobe Bryant, 6-24 and Game 7 of Finals against the Celtics. That was the worst game I've ever seen from a professional superstar. And he didn't play well enough in the playoffs. It's just a fact, and that's where the superstars step up. He didn't bring it. So, you know, great guy. I mean, a great player, great story for the Bulls. Got him at 30, but I'm not losing any sleep. He's gone. I think the decision was right, and we traded him at the exact right time. And I think in the long run, this will be a huge win for us. But it doesn't take away from the fact that he did a lot of good things here, no doubt about it. So you weren't high in the trade, I take it.
Originally, I wasn't high on the trade. Like everybody at Blaggable, I was kind of influenced by them.
yeah.
But I think negatively influenced by them. I'm just kidding. But,
I can just imagine the Blaggable room when that trade happened. I can just holy
yeah,
cow.
It was bad. It was bad. I actually wasn't I wasn't on the staff at that point yet. I was just a random fan going on there all the time.
No,
so
I'm keeping a lot of those tweets from that era. I'm going to enjoy sharing those in 2 years. I really am. I have them all from a few select people I follow. And when the time is right, I will share them all. It's going to be a lot of fun. Because, hey, listen, I wanted Monk. I was upset when they drafted Markkanen, and they proved me wrong. I didn't want Noah. You know, they proved me wrong. I've garnered a little bit more faith than most people have, but I just owe that to, you know, I feel like he saved me from the Crouch years. Paxton did. This is not Gar. I don't have a lot of respect for him. I don't even know what he does, but I know John Paxton knows what the heck he's doing, and he's a very smart man, and I think he's a good guy, and he has earned my trust forever. So I think as long as he's making the decisions, I feel comfortable we'll be going in the right direction. What other positives? I mean, what do you think the best thing that they've done?
The best thing?
Hiring Tom.
Well, that was a good decision. They have obviously found some diamonds in the rough with Taj Gibson and Jimmy Butler. Obviously, Jimmy Butler, a lot of it was his own self-will to be great. But they've drafted decently, like you said. They did build a team that made the Eastern Conference Finals, and they added a lot of supplemental pieces that were kind of under the radar with, like, Kyle Korver, Ronnie Brewer, those T.J. Watson, adding all those pieces that kind of fit together to create that culture of winning that make that team so successful. So they've definitely done some good things. I think it's more of a recency bias with Gar and Pax, just because the thing that I remember is the OKC thing, trading Tony Snell for Michael Carter Williams, cutting Spencer Dinwiddie, all that stuff that they've done recently. So if you look at their record as a whole, it's not quite as bad, and they've made some good draft picks. I know it was Paxton, right? With Joakim Noah, he was heavily criticized for making that pick, and Joakim Noah obviously panned out. So they made some good
Spencer
picks.
Spencer Hawes, everybody wants Spencer Hawes. I mean, I was not a fan of that pick either, right? And first of all, to even get Noah is a miracle, because that was part of the Eddie Curry trade. So Eddie Curry, basically, he traded this walking turd from Jerry Krause for a number one pick and the ability to switch picks. And that year, the Bulls were actually much better than number nine, but they got the Knicks pick. So that's how they got – they even got him in the first place. I mean, you know, Sam Hankey does that, and they're building a gold statue to him, and you never hear that mentioned ever. You know, so I mean, the fact that we even got Noah was a miracle, and strictly due to getting Eddie Curry. And I wasn't happy with the pick, and I was wrong. They were right. I was wrong. And so, again, that's where I have a little bit different opinion, because Noah is one of the best players in the history of this team. And I love that kid. But he deteriorated really quickly. I blame that on the head coach, you know, playing him 40-plus minutes at a center position and back-to-backs and December of 2012 was just so incredibly dumb. And people just nod their head and act like, oh, that's Tibbs being Tibbs, you know, and all this nonsense. But I think he's starting to be exposed a little bit, you know, going into the Minnesota situation. I think most people, if you asked him right now, why did the Bulls really take off in 2010? Yeah, he had a big part of it. He was part of it. But that team was extremely talented, and they added a lot of nice free agents in Korver and players like that really were solid for them. And that's when, you know, Rose blossomed, and that's when Taj and Noah really blossomed. And I don't know if they got enough credit for being the defensive stalwarts that they were. What's your take on why Tibbs is struggling so much in Minnesota? What's going on up there?
I honestly haven't watched a ton of Minnesota Timberwolves games, but it seems like super teams, they always take some time to gel, so that'd be my kind of cop-out answer to that question.
Okay. That's a good one, though. I mean, yeah, I guess it took all last year for...
I'm sorry about that. I've been so busy with so many stuff that I've only been able to watch the Bulls.
No, that's
fair. All the writing for other college basketball stuff. So
that's fair.
I'm sorry about that. I wasn't prepared for that question. I'm sorry.
No, that's a question for actually, I shouldn't have asked that to you. I mean, there's other – you're not known as a rabid Tib lover. There's other ones on Twitter that I should save that one for.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. Who would you – let's say that, you know, you Bloggable buys the team and fires Pax, who would you like to see hired to run the team?
Maybe this is crazy, but the guy that kind of jumped out at me is David Griffin, the Cavs old general manager. Mm-hmm. I think, obviously, he had LeBron, which helped, but he added a lot of really good supplemental pieces throughout the season and, like, during the summer to help that team win a championship, and then obviously executed the Kevin Love trade as well. So I think David Griffin would be a good hire for the Bulls. Really anybody, though. I don't like our packs, as I said. So really anybody would be an upgrade.
I'd rather hire LeBron as a GM than David Griffin.
Yeah, I think he'd be good as a GM.
I agree. I think he'd be a better
Maybe
GM.
That'd be the next step in his legacy, is to be a GM in Chicago.
Yeah, I agree.
He could win six championships as a GM in Chicago GM. And then pass Jordan.
Yeah, I think he's done a good job with that. I mean, because I give him all the credit, you know, for what they've done there. And obviously, I mean, the guy is insane. And, you know, no team that hasn't had him for the last 7 years, just that stat alone is mind-blowing. In the Eastern Conference that hasn't had LeBron James has gone to the finals. The Bulls, I think, were the closest, right? I mean, that was the only team I thought that was a legitimate shot of knocking off the Cavs, and unfortunately it wasn't to be. How about Fred Hoiberg? So I know you stated before you're not a huge fan. Do you think he should be fired at the end of this year? What do you think the Bulls should do with Fred?
First off, I don't think he's going to get fired, because if the Bulls fire Hoiberg, it's just such an indictment on Gar Pax, because he was their handpicked coach, and they kind of sold Hoiberg as being like the saving system for the Bulls or whatever. So I don't think Hoiberg is going to get fired at all. So I'm not even hoping at this point, but the Bulls have kind of dived so deeply into building a roster around Hoiberg that is going to be able to execute like Hoiberg's system and thrive in it, that if you fire Hoiberg at this point and bring in a new coach, you kind of undermine everything that you've done up to this point, and you extend the rebuild multiple years, because then you have to readjust like the type of players that you're bringing in and whatever. So I think Hoiberg is safe just in that regard. So I don't think he's going to get fired anytime soon. I think the Bulls are stuck with him, or they get him, or however you want to frame it. But I think he's going to be around for a while longer just in that regard.
So is there anybody that you really like to potentially replace him if you were running things? What coaches would you like to see coming into Chicago?
David Fizdale's he's an obvious candidate, because he got fired recently. I like him. Besides that, I haven't really looked into it super closely, just because I think, as I said, that Hoiberg is going to be safe for the life of his contract. It's 5 years, right? That's how long he's signed with the Bulls.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I think he's got to what? He's in his third year.
He's in his third year, and I think it's like a five-year, $25 million contract or something like that.
Yep. So
I think he's safe for the life of that contract. So not even really thinking about new head coaches, because I think the Bulls are going to be stuck with him for the next 2.5 years. So.
Yeah. It's unfortunate, because I've just grown tired. I think this year I tried to give him the benefit of doubt. I think he's a smart guy. I think there's a lot of things he does well, and I think he knows basketball. Obviously, he played the game, but he doesn't have the passion. The Bulls have been just robbed by officials so much this year, and he just stands out, you know, blankly, like he just downed a gallon of NyQuil, and he just doesn't have the passion that you need to when your team is getting jobbed by the officials, and that's part of your job. That's a major part of your job, and Vinny Del Nego was the same way, albeit a little bit more animated. He never really criticized the officials, and it's just so dumb, especially when you have a team like this that, you know, I'll never forget that Oklahoma City game where it was a layup line in the second quarter, and he's just, you know, looking like he's just listening to a Pink Floyd album. It's a joke. So, I'm for him getting canned. And, yeah, I know it would probably be people would view that as another condemnation of Gar Pax, but, you know, and it's the NBA, and coaches are fired on average probably every, 1 to 3 years.
I think they've stuck with their coaches a little longer than most organizations, but we shall see. We shall see. Finally, to wrap this up, I can't thank you enough for jumping on the Bullseye.
Thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it.
No problem. It's great. It's great. And definitely, before we get to the last question, tell us where we can find you and your Twitter handle.
Yeah, my Twitter handle is at KingSteno, S-T-E-E-N-O, and King, just like it's normally spelled. And then I write for SB Nation, BlogTheBull.com, which is the Bulls page on there. And then I do a bunch of freelance stuff with college basketball, and I'm a beat writer for the DePaul Blue Demon. So if you have any interest in that, definitely hit me up on Twitter. And then actually on Friday, I'm going to a Windy City Bulls game as a credentialed media member, so I'm excited for that. Case Elder, he got recently designated for assignment to the Windy City Bulls, so I'm kind of hoping that he remains there for the game on Friday. So I'm looking forward to that, but maybe
great
to
experience.
Speak to Case Elder. But
yeah, it's a great experience. I always have a good time there. I've gone probably like 6 or 7 games. And you're going to love it, man. It's a great time. Last time I was there, Horace Grant was there, and Paxson was in the front row, so maybe we'll get to see him get an exclusive.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it.
Last question for you. Right now, NBA in general, do you think it's Golden State's another title? Just, you know, knock it up? And more importantly, who's coming out of the East? Who do you like, Boston or Cleveland?
I think the safe pick is always to go Golden State Cavaliers. So that's what I'm gonna pick until somebody dethrones them. I think the Rockets have looked good. They can challenge the Warriors in the East. I think the Celtics look phenomenal. The Cavaliers definitely need to figure some things out. They're not very deep right now because they have all those injuries and stuff. But you know, that's when the Bulls were still relevant and they weren't tanking, I bet against LeBron a bunch of times, and I got kicked in the butt for it every single time. So I don't think I'm going to bet against LeBron until somebody dethrones him. So I'm going Cavs and Golden State Warriors again, even though that's, once again, a kind of a cop-out answer.
Sounds good.
Except Steph Curry just got injured, right? So that's a major factor. Injuries are always so unpredictable, and they can change things pretty quickly, but we'll see what his injury diagnosis is. I don't know if anything came out with that. I didn't see anything on Twitter recently, but
no, I believe 100% what you're saying about the Cavs. I think the Cavs are going to beat Boston. I think it won't even be that close. It's going to be Cavs and Golden State again, and we'll see what happens. Even with an injury to Curry, well, Curry's the only guy in that team I would say that if there is an injury to him, I could see, you know, Houston upsetting them. But we'll see. Hey, man. Paul, thanks a million for coming on again, brother. And all the best to you, my man. Looking forward to reading you up on Bloggable. Give my best to everybody over there. I'm sure they'll love to hear it. And looking forward to following you on Twitter and reading your work at Bloggable. Have a good one, buddy.
All right. Thank you so much.